is KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in our seven-county listening area in central Iowa. I'm one of your hosts for today, Susan Franzen, together with my co-host, Paul Wearson. Hello, Paul.
Well, hello, Susan. And, you know, once in a while, you run into people who are regular listeners out there of our show. And I want to say hello to Jeremy Hess and Mike Healy, who just said this week, we listen all the time to Local Talk, and it's nice to have regular listeners. You know, this is Drive Time, the highest paid slot in radio. Now, why don't we live in bigger houses? Actually, here at KHOI, almost everyone is a volunteer, and as they say in baseball, we play for the love of the game.
We certainly do.
Now, we have a lot of music on today, Susan. Talk about that.
We're going to start with a preview of this Saturday's Central Iowa Symphony called Call of the West, featuring Dave Stamey, a Western singer and songwriter, then a follow-up on the variety of musicians performing at Ragtime in Randall, followed by a story about a children's musical up at Webster City Community Theater.
Well, that's great fare, but don't you think we'd better have some information about early voting? It's just starting in Story County.
After the music, we'll have Carolyn Klaus from the League of Women Voters to give us specific information about voting locations and registration. It's a full morning, but we'll get started with a song to introduce Call of the West. It's Montana by Dave Stamey.
When I was a kid, the snow would drift high on the barn. Before daylight broke, I'd be out with a bucket on my arm. And the cattle would watch through the dark and the cold, with steam in their breath and ice in their coats. The snow neath my boots would glitter and squeak over bones of the buffalo buried so deep. Montana, my father gave me Montana. No matter where I go, it carries me. When I look inside, I see Montana. Took us up there where he said a man still had a chance. To the alkali flats and the mud of a hard scrabble ranch. My mother's mouth got thin and hard, and the sage grew up round the edge of the yard. I learned how to cuss and how to spit like a man. I learned the way dreams can slip through your hands. Montana, my father gave me Montana. No matter where I go, it carries me. When I look inside, I see Montana. Summers we'd wait in the ditch by the old county road, and the birds would flutter and shriek from the telephone. Soft and low, we heard the ghosts of the Sioux and the Crow. So much left unsaid between father and son. We packed up and left there in 71. Montana, my father gave me Montana. No matter where I go, carries me. When I look inside, I see Mom. Montana. My father gave me Montana, and all I am, all I'll ever be, comes from this gift he gave to me. Montana.
Hello, Dave. It's really good to be talking with you. We just listened to your song, Montana. And I wonder, is that somewhat your story?
Very much so, yes. That's very, very autobiographical. My dad was a rancher, kind of a hardscrabble rancher in eastern Montana when I was a kid growing up. And all of the lines in that song ring very, very true.
So how long did you stay on that ranch?
We were on that ranch until a series of economic snafus made it necessary for my father to sell it, and I was about 13 years old at the time. And then we left Montana at that point and moved down to California.
In the song, you say that your dad gave you Montana. What was that? What did you mean by that?
Well, we moved around quite a bit when I was a kid. My father tended to be the type who looks for geographical solutions, and I was born in Montana. When I was about 9, we moved back there from, we were all over the place. We were in California, Montana, North Carolina even at one point, but we moved back there, and Dad purchased this ranch, and we went into the livestock business, and that was a very important formative era. Well, it is for any boy, actually, that era between, say, 8 and 14, in that the experiences that I had at that time on that ranch shaped me very, very deeply.
In what way?
It taught me how to work. It taught me appreciation of living in a rural atmosphere and working, working with my hands and learning that if you want something, you have to go out and work for it, and just an appreciation of the Western lifestyle, the ranching lifestyle, all of those little life lessons.
So, what happened after 13?
Well, I mean, it continued. We moved down to California, and we continued in the ranching world. We moved to the Central Coast of California, where we opened a kind of a feedlot operation on 20 acres worth of sand dune, and we ended up feeding 300 head of feeder steers in a dry lot, and basically in a feedlot situation. And that's a little cramped. It's sort of, have that many cattle on that small a piece of property is like having the entire cast of Riverdance perform on your kitchen counter. It's just a little tight.
After that, your bio says that you did all kind of things. So how did that all work out?
One kind of stumbles through and finds things to do to make a living as you go along. And so I had my hands in a lot of different places, a lot of different types of work. So I did everything from sell tires to pack mules for outfitters in the mountains. So it was a rich, full tapestry from which to weave songs.
When did you start weaving songs?
You know, I really didn't start writing songs until I was in my early 30s. I had written a few things as a young man. I did, I did the little jaunt where you play in bars and so forth. That was the only place to play music. For people like me, back in the late 70s, was in nightclubs and bars, and I did that for a little while, got tired of it, and put the guitar down, wandered off to try and become the great American novelist, and I spent 10 years learning how to write a novel, which I wrote 9 novels, all of which I would probably fight to the death to keep out of the print now. But I didn't pick up a guitar seriously for 10 years. And then in my early 30s, I started in again.
You have all of these awards. They didn't just come like the first year you started to write songs, right?
No, I'm 60 years old, so I've had a few years on the front lines playing music all over the United States, and it's been quite a ride, I will say that, and I have been fortunate enough that my work has been recognized by some folks, and they've been very kind to me and given me little accolades and awards and so forth, and it's quite gratifying every once in a while you get one of these things and kind of lets you know that maybe you're on the right track.
How did you start? I mean, I know you've only played with a couple of symphony orchestras before coming to Ames to play with Central Iowa Symphony, but how did that come about?
That was the work of your orchestra director, Mr. Eric McIntyre. He's responsible for all of it.
Even your other orchestra gigs?
Absolutely, yes.
Well, how did you meet him?
He contacted me. He got a hold of the music somehow and became interested in it and kept listening to it, which I find amazing, someone who's such a musical master and genius as he is, to find something worth listening to with what I'm doing. I'm not a trained musician. I don't read music. I'm just kind of out there winging it. And but he found enough in this music that he thought it was interesting. And he contacted me and said, would you be interested in playing with a symphony? I said, oh, my God, yes. And then he spent a year scoring 10 of my songs for symphony orchestra and then brought me out to Grinnell a couple of years ago to perform with the Grinnell College Orchestra, which was a wonderful, wonderful experience. And then I later did a performance with the Snow College Orchestra in Ephraim, Utah, and they used Eric's charts on that. He was gracious enough to provide those, and now he's bringing me out to Ames, and we couldn't be happier to have the opportunity to do it one more time.
Well, I'll probably ask him this, but how do you score background music for songs like these? I mean, I've only heard them in their recorded versions, which don't have orchestras behind them, and I had just assumed it would be two separate parts of the program.
No, ma'am, it's not. And if you were to go on YouTube and punch in Dave Stamey Orchestra, I think there's five of the songs put up on YouTube with where I'm performing with Eric and the Grinnell Symphony, and it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. You're gonna have to ask Eric, because I don't have the slightest idea how he went about it, but I know that when he was done, it was a beautiful thing.
Well, that is very exciting. So I hope that a lot of people get to hear you on Saturday night.
I hope so. I look forward to being there. I will tell you, it's. I even went down and rented a tuxedo jacket.
Really?
I'm going to put a bow tie on and everything. Bow tie and cowboy hat, Wrangler jeans, and we'll be good to go.
Well, that'll be something to see as well as to hear. Okay. Well, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure talking with you.
Well, thank you, ma'am. I hope to see you on Saturday.
Well, good interview, Susan, and that was an interesting story, too. Now, we all wonder what a Western singer sounds like with a symphony orchestra.
We can hear it right here on KHOI. This is Buckaroo Man with Dave Stamey and the Grinnell Symphony Orchestra.
That sounds great. Well, I'm really curious now to talk with Eric McIntyre. Tell us about the idea for the original piece of music. I hope Eric's with us now. Eric?
Yes, hello.
Well, introduce yourself to our audience for those who don't know you.
Yes, I'm Eric McIntyre. I'm the music director of the Central Iowa Symphony. I believe I'm in my ninth season with CIS, and I'm also a professor of music and director of the Grinnell Symphony Orchestra at Grinnell College.
Well, those are excellent credentials, and that was a great recording. Now, how did you discover Dave Stamey?
I came across Dave when I was looking for a class. I was looking for an example of a simple waltz to demonstrate what 3/4 time looks like. And there are a lot of, I figured a cowboy song would be one of the best ways. And I was looking for the old Knight Rider's lament, listened to a lot of different people, and finally I found one guy who sounded like a real cowboy singing that song. And then I looked, and it's this guy named Dave Stamey. So I bought that one single file and used it for my class, and later thought, well, you know, maybe it'd be good to get a couple more. And eventually I started listening to more and more of his music, and it just wouldn't get out of my head.
So it really is catching. And tell us about the response when you had your concert at Grinnell. How did that go?
I think that's, among the more memorable comments, one person who is a Grinnell native and has spent his entire life in Grinnell and at the college described it as what he thought was probably the greatest concert he'd ever seen there.
Is that right?
It's really, we had people come from at least four other states to come hear Dave with the orchestra. House was full. It was full of people who regularly go to concerts and people who'd never been in an orchestra concert or never set foot at Grinnell College. I'd say it was one of the most heterogeneous audiences we've ever had, just with all sorts of people together.
Well, I suppose some of your regulars in the audience wondered that Western music would be part of the fair that night. You probably converted some people, you know?
I sure hope so, especially, you know, one of my arguments about this from the beginning has been that it shouldn't be unusual to have world-class artists performing with an orchestra. That's, you know, the orchestra is a powerful instrument, and when you've got a musician as powerful as Dave Stamey, it makes sense to put them together.
Well, you know, no matter what the genre, if you get somebody who's at the top of their game, that seems to fit in with any concert you want to do. And this is a good example of the marriage of Western music and what the usual fare is at a symphonic concert. So I think you've edified and broadened the tastes of a lot of people, Eric. That was a risky thing to do on the face of it, maybe.
Yeah, you're right, on the face of it. And I think I even had some skeptics in the orchestra until they heard the work that I had and until they heard Dave. And then I don't think there were any skeptics remaining.
Wasn't that fun to watch the conversion?
Oh, sure, yeah. I mean, it's sort of being one of strong faith. And then, you know, converting. Yeah.
Well, now you've got the Grand Canyon Suite by Ferdi Grofe. You know, when I was a boy, that was one of the first pieces of classical music I loved. And you've got to be old enough to realize that On the Trail, a segment of that great work, was the theme song for a cigarette commercial. I forget which brand, Old Gold or Chesterfield or something, but well, they played On the Trail on their commercials. So for the 50s anyway, everyone associated that particular segment with cigarettes. I don't know if you remember that, Eric.
Wasn't around for that, but I can definitely see the relation. You know, what's funny to me is a number of people in the orchestra have pointed out to me that it was also used in the film A Christmas Story. So, and they know it from that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It just by itself. But the suite actually is the different seasons in the canyon. Is that right?
Well, it's different scenes across the canyon.
Yeah.
So it's got sunrise and On the Trail with the donkeys. It ends with a very dramatic movement called Cloudburst, like a big storm.
Yeah, right. It's great. That's just wonderful music and so descriptive of the Grand Canyon. And such beautiful stuff. Now, what else did Ferdi Grofe write? I know him for that suite. Does he have other compositions that are well known?
Yeah, he did quite a bit. The other big one that's often paired with that on recordings is the Mississippi Suite, which is a portrait of a river. And his sound is one that we are constantly hearing, even if not from him, because so much of what he's done is lifted by other composers for the orchestration and film scores.
Yeah, well, he's really a talent, and I just need to be educated about other things he did, because I think of him solely with regard to the Grand Canyon Suite. And I
that's the risk. Yeah, he's a one-hit wonder, but there's a lot out there.
That's good. Susan.
Yes, I got the recording that we're going to be playing a little snip of online, and so people who go to YouTube, there's a very wonderful set of photographs that go with the suite that you can see all those seasons and see the Grand Canyon. I think that might be of interest to some people.
Well, it'd be like a video that accompanies the
That's
music.
Right.
And
That's,
so,
yeah.
You know, I think that if you do that, you really see through the eyes of the composer what they were trying to accomplish musically that matches up with the visual. So that's a real nice thing to have available. It's a wonderful age we're living in. But I think that everyone should look forward to this concert on Saturday night, because it is a unique marriage between Western music and a symphony. And, you know, we can be proud that the names we have a symphony. And I always see their concert at the Bandshell. And I'm so impressed, Eric, with you and your musical choices. And, gee, I always resolve to go to the concerts during the year, and I try to do that. So you really are to be complimented for your wonderful work with the symphony, the Central Iowa Symphony, because there are artists out there that I'm sure have other walks of life that they're involved with every day who, like the municipal band, give their time to have this wonderful organization go. And you're to be credited with making that happen and stimulating and motivating people. So congratulations on your work. And you also work with the Grinnell Orchestra, too.
Yes, yeah, I sure appreciate your comments on that. And, of course, especially your idea that you try to get out there to hear the concerts. And I want to make sure that you try to get out there and hear this one, because this one's going to be one for the books.
Well, I think it'll be unique. And is there a time when they can meet the performer after the show? And
yes, Dave is a very accommodating guy, and he's very down to earth. I've seen him in other performances as well, and he makes himself available to the audience. His wife Melissa will be there and selling CDs of his. And so I also point out that before the concert at 6:45 on Saturday evening, I'll be giving a pre-concert discussion where I'll discuss in great detail the collaboration with Dave, as well as a lot of information about Griffey's Grand Canyon.
Hey, that's great. We've been talking with Eric McIntyre, who is the director of the Central Iowa Symphony, a concert coming up at the Ames City Auditorium this Saturday, October 13th. 7:30 p.m., and you can be there early to hear Eric's commentary. Tickets are available at Gilger Jewelers on Main Street in Ames. Thank you very much, Eric.
Thank you for having me.
And now a little bit on the trail from Ferdi Groffé's Grand Canyon Suite.
We've been listening to some of the music and much of the story behind Saturday Central Iowa Symphony Concert with Dave Stamey, newest member of the Western Music Hall of Fame as guest artist.
Well, it's a terrific-sounding concert. It'll be Saturday, this Saturday, October 13th, 7:30 p.m., Ames City Auditorium. You ought to come a little early. Eric will talk about his ongoing relationship with that great singer, Dave Stamey.
Also, the same night as Ragtime in Randall, And the hours for ragtime in Randall don't actually overlap with the Central Iowa Symphony, however. The Central Iowa Symphony starts at 7:30, and that is the same time that ragtime in Randall ends.
Oh, now that's true. You can make both events. The early program at the Elam Lutheran Church is 2 to 4 in Randall. Then there's an hour and a half lunch by the church ladies at 4 to 5:30. The late program is 5:30 to 7:30, so if someone came at 2 and left at 6:30 or even 6:45, they'd make it in time for the beginning of the concert in Ames at the City Auditorium.
I know some people who might just do that. The most spectacular group is the Love Struck Balladeers that we covered last week. We should play just a couple of minutes from their music to set the stage. For those of you who weren't here last week, they're a five-person group from New York. Here's a clip from the Love Struck Balladeers.
Balladeers are going to be appearing at Ragtime in Randall this weekend.
And here is solo pianist Brian Keenan from Minneapolis playing one of his own compositions, Hidden Falls. He was a favorite in past years at Ragtime in Randall. The third performers are Rod and Tricia Bianson from Nevada, who play ragtime piano and flute. Let's hear what the familiar Scott Joplin rag, The Entertainer, sounds like with that combination. Thank you. You just heard Rod and Tricia Byenson, who, together with Brian Keenan and the Lovestruck Balladeers, are the musicians coming to Randall this Saturday. This is KHOY Community Radio, and you just heard about two great musical events coming up on Saturday, October 13th, Call of the West by Central Iowa Symphony and the many talented performers at Ragtime in Randall. We have Carolyn Kloss from the Ames League of Women Voters to tell us about some important political events that affect potential voters in our area.
Good morning. I'm here to talk about satellite voting in Story County. It started on Monday at the Human Services Center at 104 South Kellogg. You can start at 4 o'clock to 7 o'clock. So do it on your way home from work. Do it after you pick up the kids from school. Be down there. Be ready to vote. I've got a few reasons on why you should vote early. It's a long ballot. The midterm ballot is the longest ballot of the year. It has your U.S. representative, it has your state representatives, your governor, and many of the state offices. And all the state offices are represented by either two or three people. So it takes a while to go through the ballot. Plus, you have to vote down the ballot this year. Many people in the past have done the one circle at the top. You know, that's how they've chosen their candidates. You can't do that anymore. You have to vote down the ballot. You have to choose each race that's on the ballot and circle the candidate. So that not only do you not get to choose one, you need to educate yourself on who the candidates are, because you start looking at these. Many of them are three parties.
So you can't really vote a straight ballot like they used to call it.
Absolutely not.
Right. Very, very important for people to know that.
Right. The ballot will be indicated which party people are representative. Most of them have the Democrat, Libertarian, and Republican. In 2016, enough people voted Libertarian that they have a designation on the ballot all to themselves, even when registering. There's also many widespread election changes this year that people aren't aware of. So if you vote early, you don't have the long lines that you will on polling location day. I've done lots of voter registration throughout the county, at the high schools. We've done registration at the nursing homes, Women's Equality Day on campus, Destination Iowa State, National Voter Registration Day, fraternities and sororities on campus. And with that, I educate them.
What's the deadline for registration?
For registration is October 27. That doesn't mean you can't register and can't vote after that. It would just mean that you would have to do Election Day registration type voting, where you have to have proof of your residency and a photo ID.
Well, what's proof of your residency?
Oh, that's a long list. Your bank account, your utility bills.
Do you need more than one?
If your no, you only need one. If your photo ID, matches up, then you do need a proof of residency. Iowa State students this year, like on Election Day, they can have gone on their Access Plus account. And on their Access Plus account, there's one that says voter registration. That does not mean you are registered to vote. It means you can put your address in that location, and when you go on to register and vote on Election Day, If that is updated with your address on it, we will accept that as an address.
So that would apply particularly to students at college.
Right.
Now, it's important to know that you are not required to show ID until the elections in 2019, correct?
Right.
So you don't have to show ID.
You don't have to do it, but you will sign an oath of authenticity that I am who I am. So, but you don't have to show an ID.
Yeah, it's important to know that because there's a lot of confusion about when the new law kicks in. You know?
Right. So. It is effective next year for any election that would occur in 2019.
Well,
I
have a question. As an election judge, it used to drive me crazy. These students would come into a polling place, and they would their address wouldn't match. Their current address wouldn't match what was registered. And when they filled it out, then they would be told, oh, no, you can't vote here. You have to go vote someplace else. And this would be – sometimes these students have been waiting in line for an hour. And, you know – are they going to go someplace else? It's just horrible.
Well, they do have – that does happen because you have to vote in your precinct on Election Day. Here's what I do. I do the Union Drive election polling location for several years. And I work the line because I might have 120 students in the line. And I go down the line and I say – who's registered? Who's registered? And they, you know, you'll find three or four. And I said, come with me. And why are you taking them to the front of the line? I basically say, they did their homework. They registered. And why should they have to wait in line on Election Day? So I don't know that the students in line learned anything because it's a whole new group 2 years later. But I do... You know, I don't – that's how I treat the ones who registered early. That's why I try to get them registered. So we will be doing satellite on campus October 22nd to the 26th. Let me check the times. I think it's from 9 o'clock in the morning to 3 in the afternoon. They can go in there. They can register.
And where is there?
Oh, Memorial Union, I'm sorry.
And where in Memorial Union?
In Pride Hall. It looks out over the All Seasons Fountain to the north. So if you come in the north door, the Zodiac, everything, if you come in that north, turn to your right. We'll have signage up. And I know many of the student organizations are planning to bring groups over there to vote.
Well, now you brought in an interesting bookmark here. It says vote411.org, and that's where you can find out how do I register, where and how do I vote, what's on the ballot. All that information is available at vote411.org.
The league does this website. Remember many years ago how you'd dial 411 and you could get a phone number?
Sure.
Now you can go to vote411 and... get the information, see your ballot. All the information is there. The league really promotes this. We have all the state candidates, the federal candidate, and many of the local candidates are on that website. We've asked them questions, and you can be an educated voter. And that's what I really encourage people to do.
Well, Carolyn Klaus, very informative.
Yes. Now, I got one more thing I want to tell you about. This came up with because of the long ballot. Mm-hmm. I have encouraged families vote at home. You know, they want to take their kids to the polling locations. You know, kids don't stand in line any better than adults do. And then when you get into the polling place, they're pulling on your sweater. They're doing this. They're doing that. If you do it at home, you can go through that ballot and tell them, you know, we have chosen this person or that person. Make it an education of what the ballot is.
That's a great idea. And we have an event coming up. This is 7 p.m. on Thursday, October 11th, tomorrow night at Fairview Lodge. And that's just north of the Carousel in Story City. And that'll be a candidate forum sponsored by the League of Women Voters, candidates for Iowa State Senate District, Senate District 23, and that includes Ames, Kelly, Milford, Grant, Washington Townships, candidates Herb Kornbach, Eric Cooper, candidates for Iowa Senate District 25, Annette Sweeney and Tracy Fries. They'll all appear at the League of Women Voters Forum, 7 o'clock, Thursday, October 11th, Fairview Lodge, Story City, right by the Carousel. Thank you very much, Carolyn Kloss.
And don't forget to go to the public libraries on Saturday. When you renew your books or take your books back, you can vote at the Ames Public Library also.
Terrific. Terrific.
Three Saturdays.
Wow. So. Well, we have one more story to cover today before Maggie comes in with her points to ponder. Loween Getter, director of the Webster City Community Theater's production of Mary Poppins Jr., well, she's with us today to tell how it differs from other versions of Mary Poppins, such as the one by Judge Story's theatrical troupe that we saw last summer, Susan, at the Story Theater. Now, Loween, are you there?
I am.
Tell us about Mary Poppins Jr.
Well, Mary Poppins Jr. is a shortened version of the Broadway show, and which was put together by the Disney Company and Cameron McIntosh. And it is a one-act play instead of the full-length musical. And because it's the Disney Junior version, all of the characters have to be 18 years of age or younger.
So that's the guideline for community. Now, this is a musical, right? The songs?
Oh, yes.
Oh,
yes.
Wow.
It has all of the familiar songs and characters and storyline. It's just fewer verses, perhaps. The same number of scenes and so forth. It's just a shorter version.
So there's a child performing as the cranky father, right?
Well, he's a very stern father because of the way he was raised.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Yeah. The show takes place in 1910 in London. And, of course, that was a different time than it is now. And father's job was to earn the money. Mother's job was to stay home and take care of the social aspect of the household. And a lot of times the children, if the family had enough money, they were raised by nannies. And so if you had a good nanny, then you probably had a good childhood. And if you had a mean nanny, then you probably had a different perspective on life.
And as I remember, the father had a mean nanny, and that's why
yes, he had.
Now, how many
Miss
kids?
Andrew.
How many kids were in the show? What's
we
your
have
cast?
24.
24?
24 kids.
Are the kids
they
in the
start in fourth grade through 12th.
Fourth grade through 12th, and our kids are on the cruise, too, I suppose, right? Behind-the-scenes people and that sort of thing?
We have mostly adults backstage.
But the kids are on
we
stage.
We have some volunteers who have been backstage as stage manage.
Well, you know, I've been involved with children's theater, and it's always fun because the kids grow into their parts, and they have this marvelous affinity for the ability to cast themselves in the role and get into their character. So I think maybe we've lost Loween, but the community theater in Webster City is very good, and I really think that this is a great venture because whenever you can involve children, that gives you the opportunity to plant the seed where they want to act and be on stage. And in my experience with kids on stage, everyone works hard, everybody does their part, and everybody grows a little bit. But if you have 20 kids, there's probably three or four that are just born to it and they're comfortable on stage, and it just seems like they were born on the boards and ready to play. And then there are kids who are very reticent and worried and tense on stage, and they grow according to the number of rehearsals and the number of performances, because kids are like adults. As soon as they get started and they get into this sort of thing, it really grows on them, and they become maybe adults someday who want to be on the boards and perform also. So it's children's theater is very important, and I really think...
Oh.
Loween, are you back?
Yes, I am. Yes, I am.
Well, we temporarily lost contact, but I was just rambling on about, some of the benefits about being a child actor on stage and watching them grow in their roles. And I noticed that I said to the audience just a moment ago how some are just born to it, aren't they? They're just comfortable.
The young man that is playing Bert will be graduating from high school this year. He started with us when he was 3 years old.
Wow.
I think 5 years old. He was a little duckling when we did Honk. And he now has the male lead and will be graduating and going on to pursue a career in musical theater.
Well, he got his start in Webster City, and if he becomes a big star, you're going to be mentioned on the late night show when he looks back on his career. And I owe it all to the Webster City Community Theater.
Well, I certainly hope so. Plus, his mother was very involved with us and started the sowing the seeds early, I think.
Well, now give us the performance dates. This is Mary Poppins Jr., so fire away. When's it going to be?
Okay, we open Friday, October 12th, and the shows are October 12th, 13th, 19th, and 20th at 7 o'clock, and then we have Sunday matinees on the 14th and 21st at 2 o'clock.
Well, Louise Getter of the Webster City Community Theater, Mary Poppins Jr. performance opening this weekend, and so it's kids of all ages on stage doing Mary Poppins Jr. with all the great songs and memorable things from that show. Thank you very much, Louise.
Well, thank you.
Now we have something that's become a highlight on our show. And I always wonder what she's going to say. I worry some, too. This is Maggie Westfold with Points to Ponder. Maggie.
Thank you, Paul. It's nice to be back. It's fun to know that I make you worry, too.
Yeah.
It's just strangely enough, this is like karma-like. Without knowing your lineup today, I decided to write about music. Isn't that strange?
Hmm.
Thank you for the chance to be back. With you both and with our KHOI listeners after a couple weeks away. I pondered several points as Steve and I traveled to and from Eureka Springs, Arkansas last week, and I decided while I was enjoying the beautiful voice of Martina McBride that today I'm going to share some thoughts on how music has always been a part of my life. My ability to remember song lyrics far exceeds my ability to remember why I walked into a room. Does that sound familiar to any of our listeners? I'll bet it does. It's a fascinating thing that we store music in our minds so effortlessly. And have you ever noticed, though, that as I have over my lifetime, that some folks do not seem to connect much at all with music? It's just something I've always wondered about. How can someone not pay attention to music of one style or another? I Googled that topic, and there is a name for that characteristic in people. The medical term is musical anhedonia. To state it simply, these people are perfectly normal in every other way. They just do not reap pleasure from music. They don't dislike music. They just won't seek it out. My own very earliest music memories are of popular music playing on the GE Box radio that sat on top of our old Philco refrigerator. In our large family, my two oldest sisters often tuned that radio to 1950s popular music stations playing Teresa Brewer and Music, 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 K-Star and Wheel of Fortune and Patti Page and Tennessee Waltz. Not long after, I was exposed to the big band sound by way of the movie The Glenn Miller Story, which played at the Nevada Movie Theater. To this day, I have warm memories when I hear old tunes like In the Mood or Sunrise Serenade. My dad happened to get his first pair of glasses that summer that I saw Glenn Miller on the big screen. In truth, my dad didn't really look so much like Jimmy Stewart, but the heart of a little girl seeing her daddy wink at her through his new glasses for the first time likely took the leap immediately to the movie star she'd just seen on the big screen. I loved hearing a longtime school friend tell me that her earliest memory of me at 9 years of age was when we met on the school bus and I swore to her that my daddy was really good-looking like a movie star.
Country music moved into my world as my two older sisters, Mary Ann and Nene, moved on with their own lives, and Sis Pat, the Johnny Cash and June Carter fan, took control of that radio dial. Pat was a big-time country music lover, still is. And Elvis, of course, was tossed into that mix. What teenage girl could resist that guy when he came on the scene? Soon my music memories were taking in Patsy Cline's Walking After Midnight and Marty Robbins' White Sport Coat, Hank Williams and Jambalaya. And let's not forget Wanda Jackson, the queen of rockabilly. My clarinet playing in upper grade school and high school introduced me to marching and concert band music. I still love to watch parades, especially the high school bands, as they march and sometimes perform rather involved routines while keeping the music going. Those bands often take me back to one particular Pella Tulip Time Festival parade in the early 60s. Our little Colo High School band marched in their parade, and our director had attempted to teach us a fun little routine. During practices on our home football field, it went fairly well most times, but come parade day in Pella, Mr. Wortman must have had second thoughts, as he frantically circulated in and out and all around in the band members, telling us not to do the routine, just play the march. Well, folks, guess what happens when only two-thirds of the band gets the message? At this point in life, it's a very funny scene in my mind, especially seeing poor Mr. Wortman's face drain of color as he watched the fiasco unfold mid-parade, his baton drooping downwards from his fingertips. Actually, it prompted uncontrolled giggling amongst some of us girls at the time. The Beatles took over high school girls' minds in the mid-60s. I can still hear their sound as it filled our kitchen that first time. "I want to hold your hand." My mom just shook her head. When Dad came in for supper and relaxing for the evening, there were no British guys crooning over the airwaves for sure. My personal favorite of all their songs was "All My Lovin'." There are three mesmerizing guitar chords in that song that I still love to hear today. It was watching and listening to the Beatles and Elvis, however, that taught me something about myself early on in life, and that has not changed. Music does, in some ways, define us. I am not a screaming, near-fainting female music fan over any singing star. I was, in fact, sometimes embarrassed to be around girls who were emoting like that. Maybe if I'd emoted more at that time in life and screamed a little at Elvis's gyrating hips and snarling lips, I might have gotten the female lead in a class play instead of just a supporting role. Of course, when we meet the special someone in our life, some song often becomes our song. For Steve and I, it was the Righteous Brothers' Unchained Melody. Throughout our lives, certain songs take on special meaning, whether happy memories or very sad ones. Music prompts emotions. It can be therapy for the heart and soul. It can be calming, help us relax and get to sleep. And it can be so very sad for some at tough times in life that they literally cannot listen to particular songs until grieving has helped them to move through sadness to some degree. The lyrics to music are poetry. Leonard Cohen's lyrics are a prime example. Some of the most mournful lyrics, don't we all know, are those in those country songs. Lyrics can also be downright silliness. All in all, an all-time favorite grandchild memory for me from the Christmas season is when our music lover Lenny Brin, then 4 years old, pronouncing her R's as W's, sang me to sleep one night with no fewer than 10 rounds of all the lyrics to "Guama Got One Dova by Wayne Dill." Her uncontrolled giggling between verses will forever reside in this grandma's heart. Why certain lyrics stick for literally a lifetime is hard to figure also. Maybe a psychologist can explain that. A 1976 song, "You're Supposed to Be Feeling Good," by Emmylou Harris, contains the lines, "Honey, does it blow your mind that the prophets could lie?" That question may for some be a metaphor for life. For me, it's just a line from a song that resonated the first time and it never left me. I have no clue why. I do know that Emmylou got me through miles and miles of jogging and staying trim and fit back in the day with her rendition of Born to Run. That song paced my stride perfectly once I got warmed up to run my 3 miles each morning. Oh, that Emmylou and I were both that young still, and that I could take off and lose myself by way of a good run and her voice resonating in my ears. Those were the days, folks.
Well, Maggie, that's great music. The soundtrack of our lives, you might say. So, Maggie Westfold, thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. Paul Wearson and I, Susan Franzen, have been your hosts for today. Other voices you heard were Dave Stamey, Eric McIntyre, Carolyn Klaus, Louine Getter, and Maggie Westfold.
You can listen to today's Local Talk Show and any of our past Local Talk Shows online at our website, khoifm.org. There you will also find information about our guests along with relevant links to today's stories. That's khoifm.org. There are also rebroadcasts of this morning's program at noon and 5 p.m.
Local Talk was engineered by Aladdin. Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Other music you heard was Montana by Dave Stamey, Buckaroo Man, also by Dave Stamey, performed by the Grinnell College Orchestra, conducted by Eric McIntyre, and the Grand Canyon Suite by Frede Grofe, as played by the New York Philharmonic Orchestra, conducted by Leonard Bernstein. The Love-Struck Balladeers, Hidden Falls by Brian Keenan from his CD Hidden Falls, and Scott Joplin's Rag, The Entertainer, performed by Rod and Tricia Byenson.
Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a show, and if you would like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 515-292-2878 or contact us through our website, khoifm.org. That's also where you need to know to contact us if you decide to become a member or renew your membership today. Just look for the yellow donate button.
If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as listener and your generous contributions are what make KHOI possible. Thanks for listening and see you again on the radio.